Everyone, thank you all for being here. This is the Wednesday, March 11th morning session of the Portland City Council. It's great to have you all here. Keelan, if you could please call the roll.
Fritz?
Here.
Hardesty?
Here.
Udaly? Wheeler?
Here. And now we'll hear from legal counsel on the exciting rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. If it does not, you may be ruled out of order. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Please remain seated in council chambers unless entering or exiting. If you are filming the proceedings, please do not use bright lights or disrupt the meeting. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping keep your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you very much. First up is communications.
Number 194, request of Trish Baker to address council regarding proposal to name a park or building after Commissioner Fish.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
And the microphones slide around, so if you want to bring it a little closer, about 6 inches seems to work the best for everybody.
Good morning, Mayor Ted Wheeler, and fellow commissioners. My name is Trish Baker. I am here this morning to make a request as a private citizen. As you all are aware, we lost our beloved Commissioner Nick Fish back in January. He contributed so much to our community that I feel we should dedicate his memory by naming a building or park after him. Also, it would be nice to have an award that would be designated for an individual or group whose ideals and attributes best reflected Nick Fish to be given during the Spirit of Portland Awards ceremony. I hope you will give my idea a lot of consideration. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Ms. Baker, for being here today, and thanks for expressing your sense of urgency to honor our late colleague, and thank you for remembering him. We miss him dearly. I also want you to know that Patricia and his entire family, they are open to ideas and considering ideas, and we'll certainly pass this along to them as well, and we appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We're taking our lead from the family.
Thank you.
But I'll pass this along. Thank you. Commissioner Hardesty had a comment as well.
So, Ms. Baker, I just want to reaffirm, we had the pleasure of meeting a little earlier this morning.
Yes.
I told you we look scarier than we really are, right? And I was right, right?
Not at all. Thank you for making me feel comfortable. I appreciate your support.
You are very welcome.
Thank you.
Number 195, request of Chaz Bridge Crane Johnson to address council regarding Black Lives Matter, especially during this time. Beware the Ides of March and filing to be elected closed yesterday, March 10th, 2020.
Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners. Madam President of the Council, Joanne Hardesty, Mayor Ted, Commissioner Fritz. When I wrote down my communications requests, it's always important in this city, maybe the whitest major city in America, to advocate for the Black Lives Matter message. Since I signed up, our brilliant Portland Police Department has gone through the courts again. And when racists and neo-Nazis come to town to protest, what does Chief Jamie Resch's brilliant police department do? They arrest women of color who are dancing in a manner that distracts the police. So, all you brilliant elected officials, not just here in the City Council, but also including thankfully departing DA Rod Underhill, racistly waste taxpayers' money and taxpayers' time having a jury trial about a woman of color dancing in a way that distracts and or offends the Portland police. So obviously this issue is best focused on Mayor Ted Wheeler because he is also functioning as the police commissioner. It's a jury trial, so our brilliant DA, Rod Underhill, hopefully we'll have a winner in the May primary election. Mike Schmidt or another excellent candidate will be the one to replace our lame duck district attorney. And we'll see a DA who does not waste the public's time protecting police from twerkers. I think the Willamette Week has found Joe Biden's campaign slogan, live cheap or die trying. That's pretty much the message that the Democratic Party is saying, that it's a group of oligarchic elites that think that if we can just roll back to when Joe Biden was vice president under Obama and everything progressive was being stifled by Mitch McConnell, that we'll have made progress. Ending the Trump administration is in no way progress. Different candidates talk about what they'll do on day one. Those of you, only Chloe and Ted, of those of you who are here, are running for re-election. So I look forward to hearing more about your day one plans. Joe Biden has not even made it clear if on day one the only thing he will do is establish a blue ribbon commission to determine which child can be uncaged until the commission determines if any other children should be uncaged. So November is looking bleak. May is looking better. We have some awesome candidate issues going forward here. We're going to be talking soon about funding the public elections funding. So I thank you for making some little light shine here in Portland.
Thank you.
196, request of Sarah Hobbs to address council regarding hospital security to stop calling police with demands that they arrest people in mental health crisis.
Good morning, Sarah.
I am really scared right now. We come clear on the second part. So if I could have a little, maybe an extra minute, so I could speak a little slower because my vocal cord is doing it really bad.
Fine, Sarah. No problem. All right. Take your time.
For the record, my name is Sarah Hobbs. While the city may not have control over hospital security staffs, you do have control over the Portland police, who are often called to arrest people in mental health crisis. They list as unwanted on hospital property. Case in point is the case at Unity Center this past November. Commissioner Hardesty, you and I talked at length recently. I am not without mercy about the difficult situations the staff is facing at Unity. But this was the case. The man was an obvious mental health crisis. And from what I ascertained, he was kicked out for solely in distress, kicking the furniture. It left him handcuffed, improperly dressed for the weather on the loading dock. Thankfully, a Portland police sergeant pushed back, refused to arrest him. A hospital psychiatrist came out, agreed with the police sergeant, took him back in for care. A report from disability rights Oregon showed that in 2017 to 2018, 142 arrests at the request of hospital security staff for unwanted. 72% of people deemed unwanted or homeless. 35% of the 142 arrested were people of color. I am often told when I am in psychosis due to my PTSD to go to the emergency room. I live only two blocks away from Good Samaritan, and that would be the last place I would go. Not because of my fear of the medical staff, because the medical care I get there is second to none. But I have been on the receiving end of aggressive behavior by the security staff. One time I went into the emergency room, and I, as a patient, de-escalated a person in a mental health crisis, while hospital security just stood there and glared and left once I got the person de-escalated. I am scared that I would become one of those 142. Mayor Wheeler, as police commissioner, I am asking that you start taking a stand that you will not allow Portland police to be used to do hospital security's dirty work.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you for acknowledging that the police officer at Unity did the right thing. And I'm very, very proud of that decision.
I know the police officer did the right thing, and they're trying to get his badge. So, again, I'm not without mercy. It's what the staff is facing. My gripe, though, is with what I personally experienced. We are reading and with hospital security.
Thank you, sir, for coming in. You have friends here, and we appreciate it. Commissioner
Mayor
Hardesty.
I want to also thank you, Sarah, for coming in and for your very powerful testimony. I think you raise a bigger issue, which is we have security that are trained outside of a first responder system, and they don't answer to us, the public. They answer to a private employer. And I have found that whether it's on TriMet, whether it's at OHSU, private security are trained to do inappropriate things, in my opinion. And because we don't have oversight over them, we have to figure out how to hold them to a higher standard and make them report to us about the kind of incidents that you've described. This is becoming more and more prevalent, and I'm just amazed at how often I find out that private security have just, well, that's the way we were trained. Well, who trained you that way, right?
Yep.
Clearly they need more de-escalation training. Clearly they need more accountability and standards in place. So I just want you to know that I hear you, and I see this, and I see it through a lot of systems, and our mental health system is just one of them.
I was a patient in that ER de-escalating somebody else in the waiting room, and security at the Good Sam ER was just glaring, and once I got that patient de-escalated, they walked out.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
197, request of Alex Wilson to address council regarding decriminalized nature Portland.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Ted Wheeler, Commissioner Hardesty, Fritz, Chloe. My name is Alex Wilson. I come on behalf of people, plants, animals, and fungi. I'm a canvasser and organizer for Decriminalize Nature, who is currently working to decriminalize entheogens for the city of Portland. These medicines are so powerful that it moved a then 19-year-old to overcome his depression, his anxiety, to drive across the country, and to join a coalition of activists that you see behind me working to fight for our rights to use these medicines. If you've ever had teenagers, you may know how hard it is to get them to be motivated. My mom would say it was a miracle, but in the year that I've been working on this campaign, I've met thousands of people who have shared similar healing stories, and many of them are here with us today. Entheogens have been used for thousands of years by indigenous people of North and South America. Persecution for using them is nothing new. It dates back to the conquistadors, who would disrupt their mushroom ceremonies and their mescaline cactus ceremonies. They would slaughter innocent men, women, and children. Every day, we live that same trauma when our rituals are forced to be underground because of the threat of persecution and penalty from the law. While the rituals behind these cultures belong to those people, the plants and the fungi and the animals belong to all people of Earth. It is our birthright, under cognitive liberty, freedom of speech, to worship how we feel fit. This is an argument for civil rights, for human rights. But let's consider the good things that this will bring. Science has caught up, and we now know that entheogens are safer than coffee, that is to say, very safe. Johns Hopkins, NYU, Imperial College of London are all universities that have been studying psilocybin mushrooms, and they've found conclusive data that says that mushrooms and other psychedelic plants and fungus can help combat PTSD, addiction, depression, cluster headaches. Entheogens have the capacity to transform consciousness, but they require a ceremonial setting and a facilitator to guide the experience often. I'm here to ask that we have a commitment from our city council and from our law enforcement not to enforce and or prosecute any users or practitioners of entheogenic medicine. We are in the midst of a mental health crisis, and we cannot be ruling out solutions, especially when the solutions are plants that are native to our environments right here in Oregon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. And I've copied down the words I want to research. Entheogens, psilocybes, and could I ask you one follow-up question? You said something that was interesting. So there's the medicinal effect, and then you also talked about the need to have a particular environment. Mm. And you mentioned... it wasn't a religious environment. You said a ceremonial environment. Could you give me a few more sentences on that?
Sure. So a mushroom ceremony could look like sitting around this campfire with your friends, sitting with mushrooms. It could be having a healer or a practiced shaman administering a dose of mescaline cacti. It could be in any setting, but what's important is that it's treated with reverence and respect for the medicine, and that people sit and experience what they're going through with the medicines and what the medicines have to teach. It's important that when we use these medicines, we take time to learn about them and not to be distracted with other things. Often, I think entheogens and mushrooms have been associated with the party scenes, but they've been used for much longer as ceremonial medicines because they can occasion mystical-type experiences.
Thank you.
Interesting.
I appreciate
Thank you.
That. Indeed. Thank you for your testimony.
Very welcome. Thank you for hearing me out.
Yeah, you bet.
You were nervous, weren't you?
This is my first time.
Well, you did an excellent
yeah.
job.
Thank you.
Come back.
Yeah, we appreciate your
I will. We will be back on April 1st. We'll have all four communication slots. And we hope to have four people testify, and we hope to make a bigger case. We're going to keep showing up until we get this thing done.
Be here.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. We'll probably still be here.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's over now.
All right.
Thank you. You survived.
We'll see you April 1st, okay?
Yeah, we appreciate your being here. Thank you. Next individual.
198, request of Sheila Mason to address council regarding St. John's Welcomes the Village Coalition.
Ah, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Sheila Mason, for the record.
I'm here as part of the St. John's Welcomes the Village Coalition, a growing group of now more than 420 neighbors supporting the transitional tiny home village by the Joint Office of Homeless Services and Do Good Multnomah on the property of the St. John's Christian Church. In 2017, I had a home in Kenton and got involved with the Kenton Women's Village pilot project as part of the Kenton Neighborhood Associations. Like some neighbors in St. John's, I was also initially opposed to the Kenton project for all of the reasons that you regularly hear and was very vocal about it. There was a point early in the project discussions where we were working through a draft of a good neighbor agreement, a document that at that time was quickly shaping into a rule book where one type of neighbor was getting to define how another type of neighbor was going to be able to exist in the community. At that point, I took a pause. What would I say if, as a woman living alone in my home, a group of well-meaning neighbors came to my door with such an agreement, stating that, out of concerns for everyone's safety, I wasn't allowed to have male guests over after dark? It was absurd and wrong, and I realized I had to look at the problem differently. House neighbors are far from perfect, and privilege is invisible to those of us who have it. I started doing some basic research and was humbled to find how incredibly disconnected I was at the time to what was happening with the state of wages, housing options, and support, not only in my Portland community, but in many cities across the U.S. I decided then to commit myself to actions and solutions in this space, which is what brings me here today. I believe that many small, well-executed, community-supportive solutions like the Transitional Tiny Home Village plan for St. John's and others are one way to make a measurable impact in our housing crisis right now. I'm grateful to be regularly welcomed into the Hazelnut Grove community and to have been voted onto their board. I see the residents, both current and past, as leaders and change agents in their own right, and that they, along with groups like Dignity Village, Right to Dream 2, and others, have helped pave the way to show what solutions can be possible. Villages have been proven to work. I am also continually amazed with how kind, compassionate, and inclusive my neighbors are. They say really lovely things like, "We need to do better for our neighbors in need, and I want my child to live in a community who cares for its most vulnerable." And, "Everyone deserves a home, and everyone deserves to be welcomed and loved." We are the St. John's Welcomes the Village Coalition. We will continue to grow in support of this transitional tiny home village in our community as the project breaks ground and is built. We are behind the Joint Office of Homeless Services, Do Good Multnomah, and the St. John's Christian Church, and appreciate your continued support. We are ready to engage, volunteer, and welcome this village. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you.
So relieved. Thank you.
I just want to tell you how much I appreciate the evolution of your thinking, right? It's easy to just take a stand and just believe that you are absolutely right. It is rare for people to publicly say, "This is where I started, and I'm absolutely on the other side now." I want to applaud you.
Thank you.
When you knew better, you did better. We can't expect anything else from our neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks for acknowledging that Kenton Women's Village was a tremendous success.
I think it far exceeded
even the leading proponents' expectations of what would be accomplished there. It really
absolutely
was terrific.
I remember asking at the point, like, what we thought the pilot, what would define a successful pilot. And at the time, the pilot program was planned to be about a year or 18 months. And they thought that they would be wildly successful if we housed 7 women during the pilot period. And I believe during the pilot period, they housed more than 20. So more than 3 times what was expected. And I think that was a big surprise to all of us. And
I'd just like to add how important this story is.
Yes.
My office worked with the Kenton community and the Kenton Village in that kind of development phase. I was there the night the Neighborhood Association took the vote. It was really tense. I had no idea which way it would go. And I believe it was about 75% for the village.
Wow.
And the second vote, a year later, I think, was unanimous. people in St. John's, there are people in St. John's who are opposing the village out of fear, and your stories like yours are just absolutely essential. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here.